It went silent. And you know, normally when there's a silence, you'd think, oh, it's 10 seconds, but it felt like 10 minutes. It really wasn't, but at the time it did, because it made me think. I was pregnant with Zach, you know. I was like, what is going on? I can't believe he's just, you know, maybe I've said something wrong. And he said to me, why don't you want to be the CEO? And that day, and I can remember it like it was yesterday, Kim, it completely changed my mindset.
Hello, and welcome to the Women of the Future podcast, a podcast made in collaboration with the Women of the Future programme, a platform built to unlock a culture of kindness and collaboration among leaders, as well as support and celebrate the successes of women. I'm Kim Rowell, and I won the media category at their awards in 2018 in recognition of my continued work as a commissioner, producer, and children's author, particularly within the mental health remit. I'll be talking to my guests on this podcast about their careers, who or what gave them their first big break, their successes, failures, and inspirations along the way, and how they came to be a part of the Women of the Future network. Tanya Patel is a CEO with a greater purpose. Founder of both a sustainable women's wear brand, Chapter London, as well as the specialist maternity and nursing brand, Lillian Ribbon, Tanya has combined her business acumen with a passion for creative fashion solutions. Her clothing range has featured everywhere from The Independent as one of their best maternity jeans 2 years in a row, Grazia, The Sun, and The Daily Mail. The Evening Standard even declared Lillian Ribbon the perfect place for a then-pregnant Meghan Markle to shop. Winner of the 2015 Young Achiever accolade at the Asian Women of Achievement Awards, part of the Women of the Future programme, Tanya confesses that it taught me to ask for my worth. Committed to paying her career experiences forward, Tanya's ultimate intention is to inspire young, budding female entrepreneurs into business.
I was born in London and my parents got divorced when I was 5 years old, which led to me moving to Leicester. So really different in terms of where I started to where I went to. But what that did is at a very early age, I decided to sort of really embrace change. And I felt like I really was able to find myself. So from an upbringing perspective, I come from a single parent family. My mum has, you know, raised me, and she's played both roles. She's played the role of my mother and the role of my father. And I've got a lot to thank her for and be grateful towards her for.
And that, like you say, is going to have quite a big impact on you, I'm sure, at such a young age. But did it feed into your school life at all? What were you like as a student?
I think when I was younger, I was always really curious and loved to get good grades. I mean, I know it's not probably normal, but that was my motivation to really enjoy that experience. School gave me a lot of stability, which was great. And I realized that I just really enjoyed learning about subjects, the world, and connecting with people. And funnily enough, I have a 7 year old and he's very similar. So, you know, it's definitely a place where it really challenged my curiosity, and I just love to learn even to this day.
I always love it when you look at your child and you're like, oh, that's some, that reminds me of me.
Yeah, absolutely.
slightly terrifying.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So when did fashion and that side of things start trickling into what you were doing? Was there a seed that was planted when you were in academia, or was there an influence somewhere that sparked your interest?
Okay, so how it really started was my mum was very passionate about education as well. She, you know, starting off with very little, it was very much study hard, get the job that you want, and that will support you then in the future to be independent and be on your own 2 feet. So where did fashion really, it's funny how fashion came into it, actually, because I actually wanted to be a lawyer. That's the first thing that I really wanted to do. I studied law for A level, and I thought actually that was going to be my path. However, in that last year of sixth form, I got a job at HSBC. And I became a small business account exec, and I saw how people ran businesses up to about £6 million. So I was in charge of accounts up to £6 million. And I just found this new love of business. That's first of all sort of where the business element came from. So I still believe that although I love fashion, I feel like business is my passion in general. Where did fashion come from? You know, it's funny how it, when you reflect on your life, it all comes back 360. But fashion came from my uncles, who I actually went to go and live with at 5 years old, manufactured for Marks and Spencer, the Arcadia Group, a long, long time ago. So as a little girl, Saturday wasn't going to ballet. Saturday was going to the factory to go and help stick stickers, go and have a look at the behind the scenes. And my uncle, who are, you know, I, we're still very close, always inspired me as being that businessman. And fashion was the second bit of that. So fashion really inspired me in terms of I saw the pace, the tenacity of how fashion is moved and made. And I just thought, actually, this is amazing. And I think I was at a really nice crossroads in sixth form where I decided, actually, doing law for A level, I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I would. And I'm glad that I got a flavour for it because not many people did A level law. So actually, not many colleges offered it as an option, I don't think. So I'm glad that I got a flavour of that. But I realised that business really was my true calling. And then it's about really discovering what that element of business would be. And fashion, you know, I was in a really interesting situation in my graduate scheme where I had the offers of going to work for either Marks and Spencer or an investment bank. So if you go and ask for advice, which is what I did, I think a lot of people just said to me, go for the investment bank. That was 2008. You remember the credit crunch. We know how tough it was. But my heart just said to me, what Marks and Spencer were offering is the journey of leadership. And I felt like my natural skills and personality would fit better there. So I thought, actually, I've got no harm in trying the business placement scheme, which is what I did. Absolutely loved it. And then I thought, actually, this is probably my calling. So sort of went up the rankings with Marks and Spencer in the graduate scheme, and fashion was just a part of that. So whenever they gave me a new appointment, it was womenswear again. And I remember my boss, Patrice Ash, I'm sure she won't mind me mentioning her name. She was saying, one day, Tanya, you will need to go and be a foods manager if you want to be well-rounded. And I remember her persuading me to go and do it for a year and see how it goes. And I actually loved it just as much. That then started my journey sort of in the store manager, being more of a generalist, because I actually, it wasn't necessarily fashion per se, it was leadership is the bit that I really enjoyed.
I find this really fascinating because looking at your career journey, I don't like using the J word, but I will, the journey. You did spend about 10 years with Marks and Spencer in the end before moving on to other things, which we shall talk about. But you also studied for a joint honours BSc in business and human psychology, which I find really, really interesting because it's clear that you actually want to understand the motivations of people and get under the skin of that in what you're doing, as a part of what you were saying when it came to your leadership and how you were going to evolve and adapt and use that in what you were doing. But it would be great if you could maybe speak a bit more about any conscious decisions that you made to really understand the consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing is the team. So what my psychology degree supported me with, and also going to Aston University supported me with, is really working with diverse communities and people and understanding how everybody works and how everybody has a purpose. And everybody can bring something fascinating to the table if we give them the chance. You know, I remember one of my old teachers saying that you never want to mix ambition with ability, but actually, there is always an element of surprise when you look at different thought leadership and how that can make you a well-rounded person. So, going back to the question then, in terms of how does that then support looking at the business, it's then able to really help me open my eyes up to what audience are we missing? How can we make fashion more inclusive? So that's twofold. You can look at that inclusivity in terms of sizes. You can look at that in terms of model representation, because when I grew up, fashion was very much you had to be a size 6 to 8. You had to be tall. It was very, very sort of cookie cutter what fashion should be and what fashion should look great on or what looks good. I think what I've been able to do is A, work for a corporate. So I understood what sold, what didn't, and understood all the commerciality of how business works and how fashion works. But then I'm really able to add my own spin on things. So using diversity in my models, really looking at, for me, fashion is not just a piece of clothing. And I think this is where the psychology bit can come in. It's about how it makes you feel. And what I've done with the team. So I started Lily and Ribbon, the maternity brand, when I was pregnant with my son. And then what I've done with Chaps of London is really look at every curve, discuss with all our audience, our customers, what functionality they would like from their dress. And then work backwards from that rather than presenting them lots of ideas and then them saying to me, I like that. What was really amazing is we could start from a completely blank canvas. So many fashion businesses, Kim, use old blocks from many years. And I know the body shape has changed so much, even 10 years. We were able to create all our blocks from scratch. It's a really exciting time. And even little things like pockets and dresses, cinching the waist, our bodies change a lot. And I think that what was nice when I started the brand is I'd also become a mother of two, and my body had changed so much. And it's just about accepting and enjoying that phase as well, and supporting how to dress my new shape, but also giving everybody the confidence around me to be able to do that. So when we first started, the whole fashion element was, we need to get out there with big, bright, bold prints, which is what we did. And that landed our first few retail contracts. And now it's really about, yeah, absolutely. We're known for our print and our sustainability and made in the UK, made in England. But it's now also about making that person feel really special, and that's really important to me, whether that's done through fabric, feedback from customers. It's the bigger picture, and I think the human psychology element is really important to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I was reading up on the work that you do as a part of your specialist maternity and nursing brand, Lily and Ribbon, the thing that made me chuckle was the bit about you squeezing yourself into 50 pairs of jeans. Because personally, as a girl with a big booty, shall we say, I always struggle to find the right jeans. And it was never harder than when I was pregnant. But that did make me smile. But the success of the brand, I mean, it's been featured everywhere from The Independent, Grazia, The Sun, Daily Mail. I think the Evening Standard recommended it for Meghan Markle when she was pregnant. So it's been a phenomenal success. But would you say, has there been a standout moment, or maybe it's a person that helped mold your idea and helped you reaffirm that what you were doing was the right thing to do, that as much as there's a huge maternity market potentially, did anyone help or guide you? Because we speak a lot about mentors and you can't be what you can't see and all of that kind of thing. Was there any guiding light for you in that way?
Yeah, so reflecting on that, the first guiding light was really the amazing leadership I had at Marks and Spencer. Three leaders that really stood out in their own right, in terms of two female strong leaders, and really they inspired me to be who I am today, because I felt like if they can do it, I can do it. And they were so personable and they always believed in me, which was really, really important. But when I started that graduate scheme, I genuinely thought I had to be a certain way. And I realized the more authentic I became, the more I was able to just demonstrate who I was, that's when I got the best results. So my leader, my last leader before I left the business was my manager called Simon Harrison, who ironically nominated me for Asian Woman of Achievement Awards.
Yeah.
And he really, really believed in me. And I remember saying to him, oh, I'd love to do this for Marks and Spencer. I'd love to be a director in the future. And I remember him saying to me, You really need to decide what you want to do and whether that's growing in Marks and Spencer or starting your own business. If not now, then when? He said those words to me and they always stuck. And it just got to a point one day where I was like, you're absolutely right, Simon, now. And by that time, I had actually probably better conditions to launch a business before the kids, to be honest. But my little boy was diagnosed with a major heart condition, and I just genuinely thought, really, when is ever going to be the right time? There's never going to be the right time. And I thought, actually, this could be the moment. But what Simon did is he gave me that confidence to say there's never going to be the perfect conditions or the perfect time. But I was still very much in the industry of retail. All my friends were in that field. And I had a bit of my banking background from previous to that. So I was really good friends with bankers and retailers. It was a funny mix and amazing to this day. They're still some of my best friends. But when I won Asian Woman of Achievement Awards, it was a real eye-opener because firstly, I was recognized for my own credibility in terms of retail leadership. But I remember saying to Pinky Lalani, when I got invited to some of the dinners, winners' dinners, and tea at Buckingham Palace, which is a phenomenal experience for someone, little me from Leicester that only saw it on TV. The great thing of Asian Women Achievement really was for me, I was able to see women of colour, of my background per se, do phenomenal things. And the world didn't just stop at being a retail manager. I could achieve whatever I wanted to achieve if I put my mind to it. And it wasn't just Asian Women of Achievement. It was actually the extension of that then of Women of the Future and becoming an ambassador of Women of the Future. I feel so grateful to call these amazing ladies my friends now, but they showed me the path of you can really achieve anything you want to if you put your mind to it. So that network came at a really amazing time. And that award wasn't just something that I put on my mantelpiece. It's something I live and breathe. And I found that with a lot of award ceremonies, you've got that beautiful award and it's nice and shiny. But with this, it came with community, it came with collaboration, and it came with excitement. And even 8 years down the line now, it's still just as exciting, which is amazing because I meet phenomenal people through that. And then that was the second part, I would say. And the third bit was when one of the judges for the Asian Women of Achievement Awards was Xavier Rolet, the former CEO of the London Stock Exchange. I just, sent a thank you email to say, really appreciate all your support in believing my journey and where we go. And he said, oh, no problem. If you're ever in this area, please give me a shout. I'd love to catch up with you and just find out about your journey and just keep me posted with everything. So I remember being in the area and I just emailed him to say, just on the off chance, if you're around, I'm going to be in the area in a few weeks. And I went to go and see him. I think I was 6 months pregnant with Zach at the time. And I had a phenomenal moment with him where he said to me, so what's next for you at Marks and Spencer? If you could have any career in Marks and Spencer, what would you want, 10 years down the line? And I said to him, I'd love to be a women's wear director. And he looked puzzled. And that's when I really thought, Kim, I'd said something wrong.
You're
And I
like,
thought, gosh, I really
uh-oh,
shouldn't have,
misstep.
told him my ambition, right? But he said to me, when it went silent, and normally when there's a silence, you'd think, oh, it's 10 seconds, but it felt like 10 minutes. It really wasn't, but at the time it did because it made me think. I was pregnant with Zach, I was like, what is going on? I can't believe he's just, maybe I've said something wrong. And he said to me, why don't you want to be the CEO? And that day, and I can remember it like it was yesterday, Kim, it completely changed my mindset. Why can't I be? Why do I have these limiting beliefs that I can stop at just women's wear director? Why does it have to be that?
That's inspiring.
So I would say this really got me to think about what are the moments, but those were the pivots and the pivotal moments that I can genuinely say to you changed my perspective on what I need to go and do and what I need to go and achieve.
How wonderful, also as a side note, that you saw him when you were 6 months pregnant, which for most men in any seniority would have been like, oh. And but then he turned around and said, be a CEO. The possibilities are endless. I find that lovely. I think that's very inspiring. But also, we've had his wife on this podcast, and I think they now own an amazing vineyard in France. So it's career goals for all of us, I think. But like you say, you'd won the Asian Women of Achievements Young Achiever Award in 2015. And there was this quote that I saw that you'd said afterwards about how it taught me to ask for my worth. And I feel that this is obviously, clearly there's an alignment here with what you've gone on
Don't know what you're
to
talking about.
with what you've gone on to achieve. But also you are equally committed to giving back and supporting charities and paying it forwards and being a mentor and all that that entails and encompasses. But across all the work you've done, maybe putting AWA to one side for a second, is there any one thing in particular that stands out for you or that you're particularly proud of?
I think two things that I'm really proud of is, first of all, starting the business with very little knowledge of how to sort of go about this new journey of mine. Being in the corporate world, all I aspired to do was to work up the corporate ladder, and having this moment of actually, do I go and start my own business or do I carry on presenting the ideas and getting recognized for that? So starting my own businesses have been phenomenal for me, both from a learning but also from a mental simulation perspective. But that goes hand in hand with being a mother. I think both of those things I am so proud of, and I'm learning every day, but they also have overlaps. It's really about embracing the day. There's always going to be ups and downs, and it's really supported me with building a resilient core. So whether that's a mother that's trying to navigate different things, or whether that's a business founder, I think it's just given me that opportunity to really define who I am. But also, separate to that, becoming then who I am. So I am so proud of Lillian Ribbon Chapter, my children, but also not letting that define me, because we can all have bad days, good days. And what I feel like I've done over the last, I would say, 7 years is really establish who I am as a person and what my strengths are, what areas I need to work on, and never stop that learning journey for me personally, because it makes me a better business founder and it makes me a better mother.
Yeah, absolutely. In all the other areas, it just makes you your own identity, which is so important. Which leads me nicely on to how did you first hear about the Women of the Future program? And can you tell me more about how you've been involved with them and their work?
Absolutely. So after I'd won the Asian Women of Achievement Award, I had some correspondence to ask if I wanted to be an ambassador for Women of the Future. My first talk was at a girls, all girls school in Wimbledon. And ironically, some of our clothing items were named after some of the girls that then asked me to be their mentor afterwards.
Oh, lovely.
But that was my first taster of what Women of the Future was, and to be a part of that network. And then I realized that there were so many other people that were just as inspirational that weren't getting recognized that I'd come across or I'd read about. So I spoke to Pinky and I said, look, I just genuinely feel like there's so many people that can be recognized. I'd love to nominate, my son's heart consultant, phenomenal lady. And I was like, have you ever heard of Asian Women of Achievements? Have you ever heard of Women of the Future? She's like, no. And she ended up winning the chairman's award. So for me, I feel like it's a part of my life now, a part of my identity. But it's really about, I think Women of the Future is two things for me. It's not just about my own self-development and me meeting amazing people and nominating them. I genuinely feel like it is about nominating or inspiring that next generation of female leaders. And I always say to the network and good friends of mine now, it's really about being and showing women that could have been me when I was 10 years old what the paths could be if they put their mind to it and if they just believed a dream. And I think that's really important, because I think I don't know if I would have dreamt to be a CEO or wanted to be a CEO if I hadn't seen it happen. I know I spoke to the girls' school, and at the time we found that around us, it was always about men being leaders, men being bosses, and women, although they had businesses, there wasn't that many people that I knew of that was the CEO of a FTSE company or something like that. It's getting better now. It was more about they had their own businesses in the beauty industry, which is not a problem. I think that's fascinating that they're able to do both. But I think now what Women of the Future does and where society is going, we are all inspired to be whoever we want to be. And I think that's the bit that really connected with me with Women of the Future. And I do feel that I've got decades of more worth of how do we support that next generation.
You can't be what you can't see.
100%. I totally agree with that. You genuinely can't. And initially I was like, no, it's all about internal drive. But also, you can't be what you can't see, but you also need to ask for help.
Yeah.
Or you need to ask for guidance. And I feel like as a female versus some of my male counterparts, I was always a little bit hesitant to ask.
Yeah.
Whether it was for the promotion or whether it was for trying to navigate a problem. Whereas in Marks and Spencer, some of my male equivalents on the graduate scheme, in the first few years, I felt like, why are they getting the promotion over me? When I worked harder, I had better KPI results. What happened? But actually that opened my eyes to what you can achieve. And I feel like you also learn from people around you, and they don't necessarily have to be women. But yeah, I think that there's a long journey with Women of the Future in terms of, it's great that we've got this amazing cohort. We can really support that next generation, but it's also supporting women. And this can probably start in high school, as to supporting each other and not competing with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hear, hear.
There is a space for all of us. There genuinely is.
Couldn't agree more. Right, I have some quick fire questions for you just to finish, if you are ready.
Of course, I'm ready.
Let's do it. What would you describe as your greatest success?
My greatest success would be launching Chapter London and being presented to the King, Walter King Charles, last year at the Buckingham Palace Garden Party.
Wow, that's huge. And your greatest failure?
My greatest failure would be, gosh, my greatest failure or my key learning would be that I genuinely thought that I could do everything in my business myself when I first launched my first business. And what I realized is that I should have taken my corporate experience with, you know, build great teams, look at the strengths of your team, and gravitate towards that rather than trying to do everything yourself. And then with Chapter, it was very different. So when I launched Chapter, I had a really good team around me. I knew what their strengths were, and I was able to really delegate in the right form. Whereas Lillian Ribbon, I was learning still a lot around how to be an entrepreneur and just being able to manage that all myself. I didn't need to, but I just felt like I couldn't ask silly questions, which I now feel like I totally can.
That just sounds like experience and a very, very steep learning curve to me. But the mantra of Women of the Future is kindness and collaboration. What does that mean to you in both your personal and professional life?
I'm trying to do, you know, trying to embed these values with my children as well. Kindness to me is that genuineness. And I remember someone telling me before about doing things with integrity and compassion and treating everyone with respect and everything with respect when no one is looking. I really believe that. I feel like we can be kind, but you have to have a balance. You can be as kind as you need to be, but you also need to have boundaries as well. Kindness starts inside you, right? So I learned this the hard ways. You have to be kind to yourself first, whether that's routine, self-care. And I feel like that then radiates to the world. And I genuinely believe that. And I remember ringing Pinky and saying, you know, this has happened, or I must have discussed a situation with her. And she just said to me, just slow down, just take a deep breath and just come back to your core. And I feel like that's just being kind to yourself. You will then be able to radiate through many things.
Yeah, and you speak to yourself more than you do any other person. So you should probably say something nice once in a while. Is there anything that scares you?
Nothing scares me. Everything excites me.
Wow.
I genuinely feel, and I'm trying to sort of support the kids with have fear, but always know that you can navigate it. And ironically, I know you said you were talking to me about the purpose of the podcast being collaboration. If you have a fear or you're scared about something, have a goal and be able to come out of that through collaboration. You know, I feel like you can come out of anything through collaboration and asking the right questions to the right people. But have your five people that you can talk to about anything, you know, your stakeholder maps, have that so that you're not in a situation where you are fearful.
I find that really interesting. I remember there was a quote from, I think it was the actress Emma Stone, who said, "Nerves and excitement are the same feeling, but nerves is without breath. Nerve is that you need to just breathe and let yourself feel it, and then you probably will channel it into being excited instead." But that speaks to what you were just saying as well, I feel.
Yeah, and I feel like any fear that you have, if you brainstorm it, break it into chunks, and write down what you need to do to overcome that per se, you can achieve anything and you can overcome anything. And I really feel that's true. And it's just about being on a journey. So taking everybody on the journey with you so that you can always fall back if you need to with people that you trust. And I think that's really important.
What's left on your to-do list?
What's left on my to-do list? I'd love to, from a travel perspective, I'd love to travel more countries in Asia. So I feel like that's something that I would love to do. What's left on my to-do list? I feel that my entrepreneur journey isn't over yet. Good things are to come, whether that is from Chapter London or, you know, really supporting and mentoring the next generation of retail brands. I think that's the bit that really excites me. And to create great memories, both for the next generation of women and to let them believe what they can believe and support them achieve what I've achieved with very little. And to top that off, just be the best person I can be for my kids and my team. And I think that's really important to me. And that's the only thing that's next. I'm in a really good place. And I think it's about just really believing in my purpose and why I'm here and what I'm here to do.
Tanya, thank you so much. It's been really lovely talking to you. So much so, I've been smiling so much that my earphones keep falling out of my ears.
Oh,
But thank
dear.
you. I've obviously clearly enjoyed myself, but thank you so much for taking the time to share your thoughts, insights, and inspirations with all of us.
Thank you so much, Kim. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Woman of the Future podcast. If you enjoyed it, please hit the subscribe button. And while you're there, why not give us a rating and review? You know you want to. For more about the Woman of the Future Awards, network, and initiative, please visit www.womenofthefuture.co.uk. See you soon.